This is WABF, and it's time now for the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campominosi of the Common Sense Campaign and adjunct professor of political science at Spring Hill College. This program is paid for by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations on 98 in Daphne and in Malbus with a state-of-the-art car wash. And good morning, Dr. Lou.
Well, good morning once again to you, Laurie. It's certainly good to see you. A little bit rainy down here the last couple of days, but we need a little bit of rain.
Yes.
We need a little bit of everything, it seems to me. And one of the things we are going to get a little bit of today is some good information from gubernatorial candidate Tim James. Tim, thank you for coming on the show today.
Dr. Luke, happy Monday morning. Calling from Birmingham, Alabama.
Well, I don't know about happy Monday morning, because Monday's always a downer, I think. But nevertheless, it's an upper today because you're with us, and I'm really glad that you've taken some time, you know, to cover this your candidacy, and let people know what you stand for and what you believe in. And I think it's an important part of, you know, the whole process of getting to know these candidates better. So let me just begin with a quick, you know, bio from you. Tell us a little bit about yourself and why you think you're qualified to be governor.
Lou, as we've talked many times, I'm living Greenville, Alabama, but I have deep roots too in Baldwin County. I spent my career doing business down there. We developed the Beach Express years and over 20 years ago and sold it many years ago. But I've spent a lot of time in Baldwin County. My background is the private sector, primarily construction and infrastructure. Angela and I have three adult grown children and three grandbaby boys who are the joy of my life. And, you know, I ran for governor, as you recall, back in 2010 and missed that runoff by just a few hundred votes, but felt compelled and led back into this race at this time. I'm 60, maybe a little older and hopefully a little wiser, maybe a little tempered. But I think we're in a battle for the soul of a nation. And if we do not do what we can to turn this nation around, we're going to lose it. We've been under an assault from Marxism for half a century, and we're sort of at that point in time, that tipping point, that we go one way or the other, and I happen to believe that we're going to turn the nation around. I think we all have a role to be. Only God can save the nation, but we all have our place and our role in everything that we do, and this is where I felt led and called to be at this point in my life.
Well, I think that those are, you know, the kinds of, you know, answers that are important for people to hear. And I think that, you know, you certainly have demonstrated, you know, the kinds of capabilities to lead just running the company that you have. And I think that's another aspect of why you are, you know, a candidate today. So let's talk a little bit about the horse race aspects of this, okay? Your main opponent now to getting into the primary or the runoff is Lindy Blanchard. Tell us a few things about the main differences between her and you that are important for us to know.
Well, you know, I don't know, because I don't know Lindy, and I really don't. She's a nice lady. My focus is and always has been Kay Ivey. That's my primary opponent. And Kay Ivey and I, you know, we are, you know, the Kay Ivey today is not the same Kay Ivey of old. You know, the Kay Ivey today passed the biggest gas tax in really not just gas, but on a percentage basis, biggest tax in Alabama history. You know, the Kay Ivey today refused to even consider removing the sales tax on groceries, which is a terrible mistake. I intend to do that. And the Kay Ivey today, you know, oversaw the state during the vaccine mandates, where we closed down churches and small stores, let abortion clinics stay open, let the big boxes, and sat idly by where they forced children to wear a mask in school against their parents' wishes. So, you know, a Republican primary where you're a challenging incumbent governor is really about the governor, do you want to keep this person as your leader over the next 4 years, or do you want to replace him with someone else that will lead the state in a different direction? And that's why I'm here today. I intend to lead this state in a new direction. You know, over the last decade, since Kay Ivey has either been lieutenant governor or governor, we basically collapsed from the 30s, give or take, in reading and math to dead last. And that is inexcusable, and I intend to change it.
Well, I completely understand your focus. There's no question about that. And and as you look at your website, I can certainly see that your opposition to Kay Ivey, as you've just said, is an important part of what, you know, what you want to be able to accomplish. I do think that when you look at the grassroots opposition to Kay Ivey, that you match up significantly with where we have been in our opposition to her. And I think that, you know, some of the issues that I would urge you to look carefully at, you know, in terms of not only being 52nd, it has to do with Common Core. So let me ask you how you're going to approach the issue of Common Core, given the fact that the BCA and the Educrats really want to keep Common Core.
The governor, as you know, is the president of the State Board of Education. I intend to be extremely active. The governor also has a tremendous bully pulpit with which and voice to speak, and tremendous influence on every aspect of education in the state. I intend to eliminate Common Core, lock, stock, and barrel from our school systems, front to back. It may cost us a few $100 million in federal money, and that's okay. We're not going to do it. If it doesn't work, Lou, obviously, you know, this has been going on for a dozen years, and we've continued to collapse. So why keep doing something that obviously doesn't work? It's stupid. So we're gonna get rid of it. I'm not gonna allow all these other Marxist pushes into our school system, including the LGBTQ agenda in our public school systems, handing out forms where children have to fill out forms with also about 15 different identities. All this stuff is going away. A school's job is to teach children reading, writing, arithmetic, history, math, civics, and leave all the rest of it alone. If they do that well, these kids will be fine. You don't have to worry about problems because they're educated and they will go on to be productive citizens.
Well, I think you're absolutely right about that, and it's absolutely a tragedy that we have not been able to get rid of Common Core up to this point, because, you know, we've had, I mean, really, Governor Ivey was briefed on the destructive nature of Common Core with a group of people that we put together to get to see her and her education guru. So there's no excuse in terms of her not understanding that the problem is Common Core. And I think that going down the road, when you are in the runoff against her, I think that you can just hang this on her neck, and she's not going to be able to answer it, because she is part of the problem, and she knows she's part of the problem. In fact, I read one of her, or I heard one of her campaign things on the radio the other day, and she said, "We've gotten rid of Common Core." I mean, Tim, this is the biggest outrage of any campaign that, I mean, you talk about campaign lies. I mean, this takes the cake.
Well, Lou, this is an Alabama governor's race, and
yeah, I know.
You got to laugh. It's so crazy. I know, but this is par for the course. Yes, yeah. It does exist. Yes, it's gone nowhere. The Numisley Act is the craziest thing I've ever seen. The idea that you would hire 22-year-olds, they're going to walk in and teach 44-year-old teachers who've been teaching math for 20 years what to do is the dumbest thing I've ever seen, all of it. So we're going to end it all once and for all. We got to get discipline back in every classroom. You cannot, until you solve the discipline issue in public schools from first grade on, there will not be learning in a class. A teacher's job is to teach unobstructed, and a child's responsibility is to sit there and learn and do the very best they can. And when you bring discipline issues into the middle of this, then that's where you got to fix that first before you do anything. So we're going to be very serious about getting discipline back in classes, strong principles, getting rid of Common Core, critical race theory, not just in written form, but we're not going to allow school systems to even verbalize this division, this garbage that is a lie from the pit of hell, trying to pit children against each other based on the color of their skin. We're just not going to do it. And I think most people, black, white, rich, poor, young, old, agree with this here in Alabama.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. Let's talk about a couple of other things that I know are on your mind based on what you've got on your website, okay? You've mentioned it already, the gas tax. Let's talk a little bit about how you want to rectify that I personally think the worst aspect of the gas tax is the inflation component to it, so that these legislators can duck away from any responsibility. I mean, it's already had a 2 cent increase, I think, a couple of months ago, and another one will be coming up next year. So how do you want to fix this, particularly in this inflationary period that we have right now?
Well, first things first, you're exactly right. That is what we call the never-ending gas tax increase, and it needs to come off forever. It's like taxation with no representation. You're passing a tax increase on future generations. But let me tell you where we are today, Lou. The conversation and the dynamic of this race has changed dramatically, probably even since the last time I was on your show. This race is about the economy, and it's about people that are suffering economically. I mean, I'm in Birmingham, and I just saw gas at about $4.40 or something like that up here for regular. So, number one, 2 days ago, I called for the governor to do these things because I was asked, a reporter asked me, said, well, what would you do if you're governor? And this is what I would do immediately, because people are hurting. And, you know, we've said this before. We've said, people are having to choose between gasoline and food. And a lot of times that sounds like political talk. Well, the truth is working people truly are having to choose between gasoline and essentials of things they need for their family. So it's real right now. As governor, if I were governor today, I would pause, P-A-U-S-E, the entirety of the Alabama state gas tax, which is about 30 cents a gallon, for a period of time till we get through this immediately. Number two, I would call a special session. I would call the Alabama legislature back to Montgomery, isolate two issues that they would have to deal with. Number one, I want the sales tax on groceries, on essential food, to be taken off once and for all. That's money straight back into working families' pockets. And number two, I want a tax rebate on the surplus in the budgets in Alabama. We had a surplus of about $1.5 billion. I want the net remaining surplus given back to the people of Alabama in the form of a rebate. It's their money. It's not KIV's money. It's not the legislature's money. It's not all the bureaucrats' money. This money belongs to the people of Alabama, and it ought to go back to them in a rebate. Now, these things do not fix the bigger issues, but this helps working Alabamians to get through this tough patch that we're in right now.
Well, I think that those are common sense approaches that are certainly lacking in what we're seeing right now. I do think that the question of the economy, as you brought up, you know, it goes back to James Carville and the Clinton period, and, you know, it's the economy stupid. Yes, there are some problems out there, as you just said, but I was just listening to Lieutenant Governor Ainsworth extolling the virtues of the economy, where you've got the lowest unemployment ever, investments at a very high rate, 65,000 new jobs. So as you approach the economy, looking at what seems to be the good numbers, how do you want to, you know, create a question in the people's minds that what looks good may not necessarily be all that good?
Well, you don't have to convince people because they know where they are and they know they're struggling. And on the front line unemployment numbers, laughable. The real number is what is called the U6. And the U6, which is an adjusted number that really gets at where the unemployment rate really is about 7%, right at it. So that's more in line and rising.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we're going to do is we're just going to begin to lay our plan out. We intend to win this election, win this primary, and begin to lay out a very defined plan educationally and economically. And the foundation of our economic plan is very simple. Get out of the way. Taxes low. No regulation. Very low regulation. Educate our children, K-1-2-3. Create an educated workforce so that people graduate from high school with a diploma that means something. They can go into the workforce. They may not go to college. They may go to trade schools, which I'm a big supporter of. And they'll come out of a trade school with a trade, and they make a lot of money, more money there than college. This is how you do it. All this stuff about an easy way out, there is nothing easy. You know, if your folks are looking for easy, I'm probably not their guy. And you're going to, if you're looking for easy, you're going to get exactly what you got today, which is a state in an absolute mess on multiple fronts. But if you're looking for someone that's willing to take the fight to them, fight the battles in Montgomery, I intend to totally disrupt the education system in Alabama, deconstruct it to its foundation, and build it anew from the ground up. That's the price that we're going to have to pay if we're going to turn our education system around.
Well, I'm encouraged to hear something like that because, you know, the educrats up in Montgomery are really one of the big obstacles, and I think that, you know, like with this Numeracy Act, Superintendent Mackey, I think, had about 90 days before he's supposed to start putting together another team to come up with how they are going to implement the math program. I can tell you right now, they are going to do the same thing that they did last time, which is to do what they want to do, which is Common Core. And I would hope that we could illuminate this to the point where they would not go down that road, but you and I know that they will do exactly what they want to do. And I think that, you know, maybe after the runoff, you know, we can, you know, start seriously looking at what's necessary to, as you say, deconstruct this. Because these people who are there, they do not want any kind of reform. They see themselves as the bearers of truth, and they're not going to give it up easily. So I do think that you're on the right track with that. Let me ask you about this.
Right.
This question about health freedom. HB 31, and I know you had this question thrown at you at some forum up in North Alabama, but I'm not interested in getting a detailed discussion about HB 31, other than to say, how is it possible for this governor to not allow the people of this state to have control over their beings when it comes to this vaccine, and being forced to either take the vaccine or lose a job? And they, and I say they because it is a swamp they up there, they did not want to cross the Business Council of Alabama, which rejected HB 31. So what is your sense of what we need to do to protect individual health freedom?
Number one, currently under Alabama law, and this is not even Joe Biden law, currently state law, and this is what the governor under pressure passed during the special session in last fall, basically said that neither a private sector employers or public employers like UAB can force people to take the vaccine against their will if they met three exceptions. And the three exceptions are: you've had the COVID before, which most people probably have. Number two, you have a medical reason not to do it, or a religious reason. Well, the problem with that is we did some research on this, and we learned, this has been several months, it may be a little dated, that we estimate, some researchers estimate, there's about 300,000 private sector employees in the state of Alabama right now that could be fired if their employer want to, because they don't meet any of the exceptions. So they either have to lie or take the vaccine or be fired. Number one thing I would do immediately, pass a very clean statute that says unequivocally, no public or private sector employer may require any employee to take any vaccine for any reason, period. And if you do it, you're going to be fined and held liable. I'm going to put a stop to it once and for all. Number two, I will not allow any school systems in this state to local systems to force children to wear this mask, wear a mask to school against their parents' wishes. The damage that they've done to our children, kindergartners, first, second, third graders, they've fallen behind in their studies because they've been wearing a mask and they can't hear sound. They're not, you know, the reading is behind because when you can't hear sound, you don't have phonics. And then there's the emotional toll on children who've been sitting there wearing these masks knowing that something is wrong, something is awry. And it is, I mean, you're just dropping a spirit of fear on them. So on those two issues, it's very easy and very clear what we have to do and stop it once and for all in this state.
Well, I mean, I completely agree with you, obviously. I think the difficulty is going to be that the swamp, working through the BCA and their minions in the legislature, are going to be a hard nut to crack. And I think that, you know, this is where I think, you know, your background, you know, as a football player, where you've had to experience tough things, you're not going to give up. And I think that that's one of the things that, and in business too, obviously, but I do think that, you know, having the temperament to fight these people, it's Trumpian. I mean, that's exactly what it is. And we can argue about the Washington, D.C. swamp, but we've got a swamp down here too that needs to be, you know, I'm trying to figure out the correct word here about just, you know, corralled, okay? That's close enough. But I do think that's a struggle that you will have, you know, a lot of backing for, you know, when you undertake that. Let me ask you this one. This is another one of these grassroots issues. I know that I didn't see it necessarily on your website, but the question of curbing the power of the public health officer, Dr. Harris in this case, is something that we think is extremely important. I'd like to just ask you your position on this, because here again, the people who select Harris are the medical board people. This is totally insulated from any elected official, and we think it can, and listen to this, and this is when I say the swamp, Tim. Here's a situation where these people in the swamp last session tried to give police powers to Dr. Harris. I mean, can you believe that Governor Ivey didn't stop that right away? But no, it died a natural death, fortunately. But I mean, for her to even let this move along without calling up, you know, those leaders in the legislature and say, hey boys, I think we're on the wrong track here. No, nothing. And I think that's the kind of thing that you can certainly, you know, look into and push for, because I think it's important that the public health official at least responds to an appointed governor or an appointment by the governor and approved by the legislator. What do you think?
So, Lou, number one, we need to fix the law, and the state board, the state health officer needs to be a cabinet-level position that serves at the pleasure of the governor. That way, the governor is the one responsible. That's the person that's elected by the people of Alabama, period. Right. That's what needs to happen. But right. Before that can even happen, I can assure you that I will be extremely active with the state health office. And, you know, when you're sitting in a room as a governor asking tough questions, for example, to Mr. Harris and all the rest of them, tell me why you refuse to allow other voices, doctors, well-respected doctors in this state, and in this nation at the top of the fields, why did you refuse to let their voices be heard in a public hearing on the question of vaccines and masks and all these things? You shut them out. You didn't allow it. And that is my problem with Harris. It's not that he was wrong. Ivermectin, for heaven's sake. He says, just like Fauci, is horse medicine. But the truth is, we know it's been a very effective drug on the COVID. And so these guys, they haven't been challenged yet.
Yeah.
And I can assure you that when I win this primary, even before a general election, but just as the Republican primary nominee, you're not governor-elect, and we're not going to act like it. I can assure you I'm going to put some things into the air, and I'm going to expose them, and I'm going to make these people very uncomfortable when they get up and walk around Montgomery. I've had it with them. A lot of people. This didn't have to be. And their judgment was bad, but they were dishonest, and they would not allow other legitimate voices to be heard. And for that alone, they should be held accountable.
Well, that's absolutely the case. I mean, we had Dr. David Calderwood at our meeting a couple of weeks ago, and Calderwood is one of these concerned doctors in Alabama. He's in a national level, too. And the fact of the matter is, he said that they have treated over 15,000 people, lost only a few with ivermectin and HCQ, hydroxychloroquine. And so this, and but you see, you get this nexus between the CDC and Big Pharma, and they want this, you know, vaccine. I mean, they have made billions of dollars off of it. And I mean, I'm glad that we have some sort of a vaccine, although obviously there are some problems with the vaccine too, which, you know, really lead you back to the whole question of how can you force people to take something that has so many problems. But be that as it may, right now, this question about forcing people and closing off discussion and just not letting doctors be doctors, that contributed to so many of the deaths in this state. I just, it's an outrage in and of itself, you know? So.
It's Dr. Lou, it's serious business, and I'm not playing games with these people.
I got you.
We'll just leave it at that.
Let me ask you this now. I'm getting bumping up on time, unless Lori is generous to this morning to me, and she's smiling. Oh, she's going to give us 5 extra minutes. Okay, that's good. All right, let me shift to this question of the bridge down here and the $6 toll. Obviously, that's another one of these, you know, albatrosses hanging over Ivy's neck, deservedly so. And she did nothing to rectify the situation. In 2019, she came down here and said, tell me what you want to do. Well, I mean, we told her, and she did nothing, you know, to facilitate moving along. And the project right now is moving forward. I think the LDOT is turning in a plan to the feds today, probably as we speak. And again, I don't want to get sidetracked on the project, but the fact of the matter is we really don't know what they're turning in, and I think that that is an issue that should have been addressed before they turned it in. But be that as it may, given the need and given where we are, what is your solution, if you're the governor, to taking care of making sure that this project is funded adequately and bonded properly without a toll, or if you have to have a toll? And again, I don't even want to say that, because I think that there are people out there who have said that they can take care of this without a toll. So let's start talking about it without a toll. How can you make that work?
Well, okay, so let me give you the history, okay? And I watched it from afar. I wasn't on the inside of this. The original plan was to build a suspension bridge across the bay and keep the existing infrastructure, the bayway, in place. That was about $1 billion. Somehow, the cost went from $1 billion to $2 billion, and what happened was they just, some genius at the DOT decided, well, we're just going to rip out the bayway, which is has about 50 to 75 years of life on it,
right,
and build it up higher, about 8 feet above where it is today. And I asked the question, why would you do that? Why would you rip out perfectly good bayway and do that? And they said, well, we're worried about flooding increased global warming. And I thought to myself, I said, if the bay rises 8 feet, Mobile's underwater. It's the dumbest thing I've ever
exactly.
heard.
Exactly. Exactly.
Lou, these people are not. These are not rocket scientists. I'm telling you.
Well, I mean, let's
they've
just.
Done, what they've done is some of the dumbest stuff I've ever seen. This is what they should do, and I have no clue, or no inside intel on what's going on with the Federal Highway Administration. So. You should have had a suspension bridge over Mobile Bay started 3 years ago, and they would be opening it up now. Number one, it's $1 billion. We're not going to take $1 billion worth of state tax revenue and put into that one job. That's the entirety of a year's worth of tax. You're just not going to do it.
Right.
So the question I always have is, well, how much is the Federal Highway Administration going to chip in? And obviously, up until at least now, not very much. So you stand back and you say, okay, do we need the bridge? Yes, we do. Are we going to toll the tunnels? No, we're not. So how are we going to come up with $1 billion to build the bridge? It's very simple. The first question I asked, and this is my background, is how many out-of-staters are using the tunnels coming, going east and west on I-10? 50% of the traffic are out-of-staters. So the first thing you're going to do is you're going to let the out-of-staters pay for it in the form of a toll. That's what they do in Florida. That's how they fund it. So we ran some rough numbers, and they're accurate, probably within 10%. You could put about a $3 toll on this for the out-of-staters and let in-staters, people that use it all the time, buy a special card where they're using it for about a quarter. And this thing would have been built, would be opening right now. No one would have ever said a thing. But when they came out with that $6 toll, I knew at that moment this thing was going to blow up on its face. And that's how you do it. I would leave the tunnels free. I'd build the suspension bridge. I would not rip out the bayway. I would add lanes to the bayway over time as you need it. And I'd get the bridge built and fix the problem and go on down the road.
Well, I think that's a common sense approach to it, and I think that hopefully you'll be in a position to where that will happen. I do think that in terms of bonding, that becomes a political issue, and the priority is usually set by the governor. And so, you know, if bonding is an issue, then you'll be in a position to where you can influence that and do something that this governor is not willing to do, because I think she's just mad at people down here because they had the audacity to kill her project, and she has not forgotten it. She may be awakened to it one more time, you know, when you beat her. So, all right, so Lori's giving me the high sign here. So I've got a couple of minutes to go. Why don't we just take the last couple of minutes, Tim, and summarize why people should be voting for you.
Dr. Lou, thank you, and I just appreciate you having me on the show the day before the election. My message to your listeners is I want to ask for your vote. This one matters. We're at a pivotal time in history. Either we're going to return this state to its Judeo-Christian foundation. I want prayer back in our public schools. Roe versus Wade is going down. We've got to fix our failing education system. We're going to stand for what is right. We're going to stand for what is true. Other states are going to look at Alabama, and they're going to see what courage looks like, what righteousness looks like, and what that means. We are going to live and act in accordance with God's laws and God's moral alignments. And other states will see this, and they're going to say, I want my children and my children's children to grow up in a state just like that. Alabama is a wonderful place. We have wonderful people here, and we are now stepping into our fullness. Alabama will lead the nation because we will do what is right, and we will stand for what's right. And South Alabama and Baldwin and Mobile County, that's basically where I come from. I live in Greenville, but I spent my life there. I have two grandchildren in Mobile. Is at the essence of my heart. I understand everything going on down there very well, and I can promise you we're going to get this bridge done smart, efficient, and not going to throw this big giant burden on the taxpayers of Alabama. I can promise you that.
Well, Tim James, thank you so much for taking time to be with us. We really appreciate it, and best of luck in the next couple of days.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Yes, sir. Take care. Bye-bye. Well, folks, there's the candidate that I certainly am supporting. I think it's clear from listening to what he said here that he's got the grassroots understanding that the conservative grassroots movement has shown that's necessary for us to dig ourselves out of this quagmire that we're in. So, without any further ado, next week is Memorial Day, right,
yes,
Lori? So I think what we're going to do is probably tape the show on Friday, maybe. Excuse me. So we'll have something for everyone on Memorial Day.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Go make sure you vote. We're 24 hours away. So get out there and do it. Take a look at the Common Sense Campaign website, and you'll see our recommendations for who you're supposed to vote tomorrow.
Thank you, Dr.
All right,
Lou.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campomenosi. This program is paid for by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations in Daphne and in Malbus with the state-of-the-art car wash. The opinions and views expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the station or management. Now resuming regular programming on WABF 1480.